The path towards wealth is, and you'll see that you're fitting this criteria, but everything you need to know about wealth building, you can say in one sentence. It's make more than you spend and invest the difference wisely.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Double Your Freelancing Podcast, where we help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and a healthier life freelancing. As always, I'm your host, Brendan Dunn, and I am here today with my good friend, Todd Tresidder. Todd is the founder of financialmentor.com. It's funny how I came across him. So I'm a big fan of Pat Flynn's podcast, Smart Passive Income. And there was an interview he did with a guy who deleted a third of his content and had like a third lift in traffic or something like that. Total link baity title, right? But I listened to it, and Todd runs a financial website with articles about financial independence and budgeting and all that sort of stuff that I'm trying to get better at. And he was advocating on Pat's podcast that people who produce content should regularly go through and delete, merge, update their own content, which, you know, on my site, I've got a lot of content, 4.5 years worth. And I never did any of that. If you looked, you know, you can't anymore, but if you would have gone back and looked at my first blog posts, they were terrible. They were unfocused. I would talk about like Ruby on Rails and all this weird stuff that had nothing to do with the kind of work I'm doing now. So I listened to Todd's podcast with Pat and I took it to heart and I opened up a Google spreadsheet, put it together, proper content calendar and content schedule for my business. I did keyword research. I figured out, you know, which articles just weren't working, which articles had I, you know, if I've written about the same topic 5-6 times already, would it make more sense just to merge them all together into one massive, better post? I mean, especially considering that the way I describe certain things as it relates to consulting would change and become more refined over time. It made sense for me to go back to earlier content and either axe it or merge it with more appropriate newer content. So I did that. I can say that that interview with Todd changed my life, but I ended up kicking off a pretty good friendship with Todd. And, you know, I wanted to know if he would come on the show and just talk about something that I find which is fascinating, which is the financial independence movement. So, you know, a lot of people have this idea of retirement as something you'll do when you're older. And Todd's of the opinion that you should be actively building up a sufficient cash cushion that you could stop consulting right now and maybe even be able to survive solely off of the interest that that money would make. It's not about early retirement. It's not about, you know, moving to Bali when you're 30 and kicking it back on the beach. It's really about how can you make sure that you're never in the position that I know many of us have been where you're forced to compromise because you need money. You're forced to take on work that you don't want to take on, or you're forced to cave when it comes to pricing or scope or something like that. So that's what today's episode is about. But before I get there, I want to shout out two of our sponsors. So first off, FreshBooks. FreshBooks is awesome. One of the things that actually, it's going to sound weird, but to go back to accounting, my accountants have never liked me because I'm supposed to keep my receipts and I'm supposed to catalog all my expenses. And I'd always never do that. And what would end up happening inevitably would be I'd go out of town and then I'd come back with a suitcase, backpack, and wallet full of discarded receipts that I have no idea like what they were for or anything like that. And, you know, come the end of the year when my accountant's needing to go through and actually assess everything and do the proper write-offs and everything else, there'd be a lot of these questions like, what was this random charge from 7 months back? And I wouldn't have an answer because I honestly wouldn't remember. So one thing I really love about what FreshBooks has done is they've gone beyond just invoicing and time tracking, and now they're doing proper expense management and making it easy for you and your accountant to actually get a handle of your finances. So, you know, no more big box of receipts or anything. You can get their mobile app, take a picture of all your receipts, and it immediately syncs with your FreshBooks account. So your accountant can go in and see what you're spending money on and classify it and everything else and make your life and their life a lot easier in the process. But besides just doing expense tracking, it also tracks your cash flow and your time. So you have a bird's eye view of not only where your money's going, but also where your time's being spent. It's super simple to use. So go over to freshbooks.com/double and enter in Double Your Freelancing in the How Did You Hear About Us field. The other sponsor that I want to talk about is the Double Your Freelancing Academy. So we actually just got, within the last week, a huge batch of new success stories that came through. And we're actively right now working on profiling and interviewing all these success stories. But, you know, I want you to be that next success story. So if you're ready to take your business to the next level, you want to find out more about what the Academy is about, why I think it's the best possible high-intensity freelancer accelerator out there, head on over to doubleyourfreelancing.com/academy. You can find out everything that you need about the program. And you can also reach out if you have any questions. You can reach out to myself or Kai with any questions you might have about if it's a good fit for you and your business. So again, thanks for listening to the podcast. And here is Todd. All right, I want to introduce you guys to Todd Tressiter. Todd is the founder of financialmentor.com. You worked at a hedge fund, right?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, got it.
I ran a hedge fund, actually.
Wow. So former hedge fund runner and manager, right? And now you're the founder of financialmentor.com, where you do a lot of really data-based writing about all things retirement saving, wealth building, all things money, which is something that, as we'll discuss, is something I've been really focused on recently. So anyway, just welcome Todd to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show, Brennan.
A lot of the freelancers I work with, they tend to skew probably 20, 30s, and up. But I think a lot of them just, myself included up until recently, didn't really put too much stock into, retirement. Maybe it just seemed really far off, or in my case, I kind of always thought that the skills I had would be valuable even if, even as I aged, or even if my business imploded, I would be okay. Like, I never really put much stock into saving a lot of money or anything like that. Right. And it bit me a lot. I mean, especially as I grew my company, as I grew my agency, there were times where I, was kind of running off fumes, and I kind of expected, I don't know if you've ever done, or if I'm sure you've heard of people doing this. I don't know if you've done this, but I would go into my calculator app and kind of budget based off money that would be coming, I thought, in the future. And sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't. And it just really ended up kind of hurting me. And then I got to know a guy named Jesse Meacham at You Need a Budget.
I know,
and
Jesse.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy. And I, we hung out a lot, and I really started looking into what he was doing.
Give every dollar a job.
Exactly. And well, the big thing that stuck with me was the whole live off last month's money, right? So instead of kind of surviving within your own cash flow, like you just said, every dollar that you have made in the past should be earmarked for something, right? I think the bigger thing that I want to kind of ask you about is a lot of retirement stuff. And by retirement, I don't just mean having a nest egg when you're in your 60s or 70s or whatever. But when I look at it, the interesting part to me is just being able to conceivably quit your job or not do any more client work for a year, for 5 years, for whatever, and being able to survive. I think that's really the interesting part for me, is kind of that independence that comes with not being beholden to an employer or, client money or whatever else. Having talked to a lot of freelancers, a lot of the pushback comes from, a lot of the advice out there is about stopping, cutting back on Starbucks or, all these things that kind of seem kind of miserable in a way. But on top of that, they're also aimed for people with more or less predictable income, where they don't, maybe they'll get a 2% raise every year or something like that. But, it's kind of written for more employees, I guess. And, I've talked to a lot of self-employed people who just struggle to apply a lot of that knowledge to kind of the fluctuations that they might have in their business and their income and everything else. So yeah, I don't know how we want to kick things off, but
well, why don't we first of all start off with the idea of retirement at all?
That's sure,
where you start. That's where you started when you were talking, which you know, and that throws a lot of people off, right? This idea of retirement, which is, as I teach it, it's just a euphemism for old age financial independence. So rather than talk about retirement, why don't we just cut to the chase and call it financial independence at any age?
I fully approve. Let's do it.
Right. And so once we reframe that, now it's more identifiable to somebody in their 20s or 30s who's freelancing and they go, yeah, I'd like to have financial independence earlier than old. You know, I don't want to wait around until I'm in my 60s to get that. So now it becomes relevant, you know, as opposed to retirement, which isn't relevant at all. And because the math is all the same, right? The science, the math, everything behind it's the same, whether you pick age 65 or you pick age 35, which was the age I quote unquote retired. You know, so then you go from there and you start redefining what is retirement, because there's another assumption behind retirement. See, that's that term again, where what we need to do is retire the term retirement, right?
Right.
If you think about our understanding of retirement, it conjures up ideas of old people sitting in hammocks on tropical beaches.
I mean, it makes you think of like pensions and, you know, that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah. And what you really want to do, the way I teach this, Brennan, is there's, you know, the common life structure as it's mapped out for us and we grow into is this idea of birth, school, work, death, right? That's life in four words: birth, school, work, death. And the way I teach it is you try to interject a period in between work and death called fulfillment. Because for a lot of people, work isn't necessarily fulfilling. Your crowd, it's going to be more fulfilling than a lot because they're freelancers. In theory, they're doing a creative pursuit that they have some level of passion for, some level of interest for, that they get some level of pleasure from. It's an art form for them, hopefully. So it may not be fully applicable here. But for most people, you know, they're a bit disconnected from their work and there's something else they'd rather be doing. It doesn't mean they don't ever want to work again. It just means they don't want to be attached to work for a paycheck. And I think that's trying to where you're trying to get there in what you're talking about is this idea, hey, maybe I take a year off. Maybe I take 3 years off. Maybe I reassess and I, you know, in your case, maybe I'm not selling the courses and I switch over and I start this new thing and it takes me 5 years to ramp up. So I need a 5-year nest egg as a bridge between one and the other event. Is that resonating a little better?
That is, yes. Because I think what draws, I think, a lot of people from employment to working for themselves as a freelancer, meaning, you know, instead of writing code for an employer, they write code for clients. I think what's really the root of a lot of that is the independence part, especially financial independence. But what they end up often doing is, you know, they just kind of transition legally their status from employee to, 1099 contractor. But not many other things change, right? Like they're still, you know, they're not living paycheck to paycheck. They're living invoice to invoice.
And yeah, as Bob Dylan said, you got to serve somebody.
Exactly right. And I've seen firsthand, I mean, I've talked to a lot of freelancers who they've never taken vacations. They've never taken time off. And the reason they haven't it's usually two parts. It's often because they just cannot afford it. They haven't set themselves up to afford it. But the second thing is often, well, you know, I struggle. I mean, that's a whole different discussion, but just being able to kind of be in charge and tell your clients, look, I'm not going to be available from this time to this time. And, well, that's a whole different discussion. But anyway, a lot of it, I think.
Well, it's not. Let me pick up on it for a second.
Sure, go for it.
Because the driving force behind going out on your own is autonomy and freedom. And the ultimate autonomy and freedom is financial freedom. Now, actually, I pull that back. It's not the ultimate. It's the next step. The ultimate is when you don't need any of the financial to be free, right? And so that's even a more advanced level where it's not even, you know, a financial freedom, but rather just true personal freedom. But that was the motivating thing. And that's what, you know, you share, I share, and your listeners share is a deep value for freedom and autonomy. That's why we did what we did.
I think a lot of us, we feel very beholden to our clients because we are dependent on that invoice. We are dependent on winning that project. And, you know, honestly, most of the bad business deals I've ever made when it comes to undercharging or just, you know, getting into a situation that was not the right situation to get in, it often had to do with money, with just needing that. So you do whatever And sometimes clients can smell that, like really savvy clients who own businesses and, you know, have done this for a while. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's always intentional, but oftentimes I've seen a lot of people who are willing to make horrible concessions because they need that money. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day who was struggling to niche down his services. And, you know, the biggest thing that was keeping him was not drinking the Kool-Aid of positioning and realizing that, you know, it is good to niche down. It is good to have a very positioned product. What was keeping him was the fear that, well, if I do that, the transition time might make me default on my rent payments or, you know, whatever else. And it's just that fear that is, in a way, holding his business back because he needs to, in a way, continue business as usual in order to literally survive.
Yeah. Being needy sucks.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's just, it's really hard to negotiate well from a position of need. The best negotiators don't need the deal. And the other side can smell it. And as you're correctly pointing out, and that gives you a much, much stronger negotiating position. What the best negotiations occur when the other side needs the deal, you don't. And so, yeah, you don't want to run your business from a position of needing. And the way you get around this, again, it's just math, right? You can't get blood out of a turnip. You either control your expenses or you raise your income. There's only two sides to the equation.
Right. And like I was saying, I think a lot of the financial independence literature or articles out there focus more on, you know, cutting expenses. I mean, the overwhelming majority that I've read are things like.
Yeah. So I'm a little different on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what you're talking about is all the frugality discussion. Yep. And, you know, and latte factor and all the traditional stuff. And it's fine, right? I mean, it's true, but it's limited. So the way I teach it is that controlling expenses is important because ultimately your financial independence is a multiple of what you spend, right? And how much you have to earn is related to how much you spend. And so controlling your expenses is important, but it's limited because there's only so far down you can go before you experience scarcity, and scarcity is not happiness. Right. And so you want to control your expenses. You want to be smart about what you spend. But ultimately, the game is on the income side because the income side is unlimited. And there's a lot of ways to play the income game. There's only so many dimensions to the expense control game before. In my experience, see, this is where I differ. In my experience, controlling expenses, you can sometimes spend as much work and effort reducing your spending as you would just to make the money in the first place.
Oh, yeah. And well, I think a lot of people, though, they are in a way very detached from the ability to significantly increase their income, that they, the only resort they have is to talk about cutting costs.
But well, I went through your course, and I'm not trying to give you a pitch for your course in your own podcast, but I went through your course and your course lays it out beautifully.
Oh yeah. But what I mean is I'm targeting entrepreneurs. I'm targeting people who run their own business. But what I meant is the average W-2 employee does not have much. I mean, yes, they can ask for a raise or they can expect an end of year, you know, raise every year of 2% or whatever else. But
well, yeah, but an employee needs to figure out where they make themselves more valuable and then work themselves to it. For example, I have lots of entrepreneur clients, and entrepreneur clients will say the same thing. My employee wants a raise. And it's always the same thing from the entrepreneur's viewpoint. They didn't make themselves more valuable. They just want more money. And it's kind of like, you know, he's an entrepreneur. If you're adding value to the business, he'll pay you more, right? And so if you're a W-2 employee, then the key here is to focus on how to raise your personal capital. In other words,
how do you make yourself more valuable?
Worth to the business. What is the skill set that would make you more valuable? And then go create it. It's not that hard.
And that's the thing. I mean, I don't know what percentage of people listening are still employed, but obviously, most people who are listening either want to be freelancing full time or already are. But even when you're still employed by somebody else, it's the same thing as being, you know, temporarily employed by clients. Find out how to make the asset you are to them more valuable, and then charge accordingly. I mean, that's really all it is.
Yeah, and be a revenue producer. Don't be an expense.
Right. Exactly. You
know, add value to the business that justifies the higher income level.
Right. Right. So okay. So I think you and I are in complete agreement that you know, it's easier to optimize for income than it is to optimize for expenses. Yeah,
but I don't want to oversimplify it. Okay. So I think you should do both. Okay.
Well, that just nets more profit, right?
Yeah. Well, the smart people work from both sides of the equation, right? You don't want to limit yourself. It's just what I'm trying to communicate is there's a downside to expenses where you start experiencing deprivation. You experience a lack in your life. And so you don't want to go down to that level. That's not happiness. The goal here isn't just to get rich. The goal is to be happy. The goal is to experience fulfillment in life. And so, but you don't want to be stupid either and just frivolously blow money, because the reality is, you know, you pay a price in terms of your life energy to go earn that money. So why piss it away, right? And then on top of that, if you go through any, which is where you started this discussion, was retirement or financial independence at any age. If you look at any financial independence equation, it's always a multiple of your spending. And so just understand, like, here's a good ballpark number, and this isn't exact, but at least it points true north for people. And it's a really easy thing to understand. There's a thing called the rule of 300 or the rule of 400. And it comes from traditional financial planning and the 4% rule or the 3% rule, which means you can spend roughly 3 or 4% of your assets annually, and your assets should be able to support that in perpetuity, right? If you want to go conservative number, it's 3. Aggressive number is 4. If you look, it's actually dependent on valuation. We could do a whole podcast on how that number
is that
works.
Off the assumption of a net yield of about 5% a year?
Now, it's actually, like I said, we could do a whole podcast this subject, right? I mean, I've got a whole book on it. It's just, you know, there's a lot behind it. But just let's keep it simple, okay? And let's just assume that there's some validity to it. It's in the ballpark. And so rule 300, rule 400 says that for every $1,000 a month you spend, it takes about $300,000 to $400,000 in assets to support that. Okay, so you can either figure out how to put away $300,000 or $400,000 after tax, or you can figure out how to reduce your spending by $1,000 a month. And what most people figure out is it's best to do both, right? It's best to say, you know what? I don't really need this certain aspect of my lifestyle. It's not really bringing me happiness. And there's a lot of creative ways to find a fulfilling lifestyle for a lot less. Like maybe you're doing your freelancing gig and you decide, you know, I've always wanted to live in Thailand. And you go live in Thailand for a while and your expenses come way down, or maybe you live on a beach in Mexico instead.
Right. You know, I was going to mention that, how, you know, what introduced me to the whole financial independence movement was kind of an overlap with the nomadic movement, right? People who, and that's, I mean, full disclosure, that's not me. I wish in a way I could be, but live in the suburbs. My kids are both in private schools and I've got a car payment, and, you know, I'm not that. So, but I do understand though that, that's where I first came across it, was listening to people who are really in that space. And because, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, that's one way, especially when you're like us and you're not bound geographically to your income, it just becomes a simple equation of, well, you know, where can I get the same or more or less the same kind of benefits I'm getting now, a roof over my head, food in my belly and everything else, for less than what I'm paying here, in our case, here in the U.S.
Yeah, the point is, that's another dimension to the equation, is you can have a better lifestyle on less money if you get a little creative with it, if that's your goal. Maybe your goal is not. Maybe your goal is to enjoy the lifestyles you've got now and you want to figure out how to focus on the income side. The point is, there's not a right wrong answer. You just want to understand the dimensions to the equation so you can decide what pieces of the equation will work for you, work best for your life situation, because it's different for each person.
Okay. So basically the goal is, I mean, it sounds like for every $1,000 of money that you need to survive, you know, or at least that you think you need to survive, you should earmark, or there needs to be at least about $300,000 to $400,000 in an investment account to support that.
Correct.
Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate. Okay. In terms of pointing true north, but the cool thing about your audience is that the entrepreneurial side has a huge advantage, because you can figure out how to create cash flow streams, much like you've done with your courses, right?
Right.
You can figure out how to create cash flow streams that allow you roughly the freedom you want, but without having to rely on assets. You're just not trading time for money through your work. You figured out how to productize your knowledge. And so that's a whole other angle.
Right. I mean, I've always said that I have a portfolio of, you know, traditional assets like stocks and bonds and index funds and everything else. But I also have in that portfolio these, you know, products that are mine. I mean, they're my assets, right? That also yield monthly revenue. And honestly, I mean, everything we do, I mean, even if you're, if you've got a client on retainer for it, that's paying you $2,000 a month. I mean, that's, I mean, granted it's one, you know, they can cut that, they can sever that at any time, but I mean, that's a $2,000 a month cash flow asset that you now have going into your business.
Yeah. So I used to labor under the same myth that it was, you know, cause, and the stock brokerage industry, you know, financial advisor industry promotes this myth, which is the only assets are the ones that they can sell you. But that's not true. There's three asset classes. There's business entrepreneurship, which is what your listeners have. And there's real estate, direct ownership of real estate. And then there's the stocks, bonds, and mutual funds and ETFs and things that a financial advisor can sell you. So I call them paper assets. And so you've got paper assets, direct ownership of real estate and business. And the amazing thing about that, Brian, when you really start digging into it, is you realize that of these three asset classes, they're a lot more similar than different. And that each can be that source of passive revenue. Each can be what it is they have a trade-off of imagine a bar in front of you where there's a continuity at one far end is passive, completely passive, and at the other end is completely active, right? So take business as the first one, because that's the least intuitive. The completely active one is time for money, right? An hourly rate. And then the completely passive one would be royalty income off a product you sell. Like for example, for me, I've got books over at Amazon. Okay, that's almost completely passive once it's built and sold and marketed.
You don't need to continue. I mean, I know you kind of, in a way, passively market it through your site, but Amazon's bringing you customers. And I mean, you're not needing to, there's not ongoing effort for you to need to fulfill those royalties.
Yeah, correct. Those books produce roughly the equivalent of $500,000 asset. And I haven't touched them since 2012 when I first created them and put them into the system and marketed them to get them rising up. And it's actually been a little test for me to see how long they hold out. They've dwindled some, but they've stabilized. And it's, you know, it's roughly $500,000 asset sitting over there.
And unlike stocks, I mean, you have control in a large way over, I mean, you could go and probably do a lot with, I know we were talking about email courses, you know, a lot with email courses or, you know, all these different methods at your disposal to increase the value of those assets, which is something that if you're owning, you know, 100 shares of Apple, you can't really, you know, I mean, you can't really, I think we're in a really good position.
Your intuition's dead on. That's part of how I teach it, which is, you know, the hardest 1,000 you'll make in your business on the passive side is the first 1,000. It's way easier to multiply the first 1,000 into 2,000-3,000 a month than it is to take $1,000 in paper asset income and multiply it to 2,000 or 3,000. And so that's one of the huge advantages that business has. And I think that's where you're going. So again, getting back to this passive versus active, we did it for business, right? But it's also true for real estate, right? You could have a fully owned property that are fully paid for property that just has a long-term tenant in it that just creates a rent check every month that goes in your pocket. That'd be fairly passive. And then you could have quick flips where you're flipping properties. That would be very active in real estate for short-term capital gains. You could have, and then same thing in paper assets. You could have long-term buy and hold dividend stocks, or you could do day trading. Not that I advocate that, but I'm just pointing out that you've got this continuum of passive versus active. And when you dig into these three asset classes of business, real estate, and paper assets, you realize that they're way more similar than different. That when you own your business, it's essentially like you're 100% stock owner of a company, no different than if you bought the stock. And so you just, you know, you want to get through your head that you can work with this for a variety of angles, which is what you were talking about. You had a portfolio of a variety of assets.
You know, one of the hangups that I had was, so my first business that didn't involve trading time for money was a software business called PlanScope, software as a service subscription company. And it was really demoralizing for the first few months because, you know, you start from zero and then maybe 3-4 months into it, you're making a few hundred dollars a month. And then, you know, my goal going into it, just like my goal going into a new job or my goal really doubling down on consulting, let's say, would be income replacement. You know, you go into a new job, you're looking to replace your income. And I treated PlanScope, that first real independent passive asset of mine. I mean, it wasn't fully passive, but it was an asset of mine. I treated it like I would anything else. And I was kind of like, you know, I wanted that hockey stick, get me to 10 grand a month in revenue so that I can live off you and, you know, and so on. But it wasn't until I started looking at that asset as the proper asset, as an asset that gets more valuable. I mean, think about it. I mean, I was growing at about 15-ish% a month. I mean, that's an incredible yield for...
Yeah, you aren't going to get that in the stock market.
No, right. But the problem, I think, is people look at coming up with these assets as total and immediate income replacement, and when they're usually not. Like, you probably couldn't have lived off your books day one. When you first launched them.
No, I still can't live off them year five.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a fun little asset. It was a fun experiment that I did. And it serves a lot of people. The reviews show it's really helping a lot of people. So it's been a fun experiment.
But I think that the issue, the disconnect that I've seen with a lot of freelancers who want to get into building your own assets, you know, they want to get into building your own products, is they think, I mean, they think of it as like transitioning jobs, right? Like you quit your current job, which means now you've lost your income stream, and you start a new job, which means you've gained a new total income stream. And it I think it just takes some time, maybe. I mean, I don't know what it is, but for me, I really just had to understand, okay, I'm building assets. These assets have great yields, especially compared to the assets that are available out, you know, in the stock market, let's say. And when I started seeing things as, this is my portfolio. Some of my portfolio involves straight up time for money.
You're close. Can I throw a word at you?
Yeah, please do.
You're all over it, but you're just missing a key phrase.
Please do.
People who build wealth grow equity. And so when you build these assets, what you're doing is you're growing equity. And so that's the thing. If you build your portfolio, you're growing equity. When you build your business assets, you're growing equity. When you acquire real estate and then start paying it down every month with the rent that gets paid, you're growing equity. That's the key theme through what you're trying to communicate here. You're growing equity. You got to get over the idea of get rich quick. You know, it's about growing equity until the cash flow from the equity exceeds your expenses, at which point you're financially independent at any age.
So somebody who's full-time on client work, I mean, they don't have the time to invest in building and writing a book, let's say.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, yeah, I think a lot of us could argue, but a lot of them say they don't
well,
have.
Well, that's where I'm going to go, right?
Sure.
If you want it, you got the time.
Okay.
It's a question of priority.
Right.
About if you want it bad enough and you want to create this, then you figure out how to solve it, right? So you either cut back on client work, or you sleep just a few hours less a night until you get the first asset built, which would afford you to cut back a little on client work, you know, but you figure out somehow how to make it happen, or you work a few weekends that you otherwise wouldn't have on the asset, not on the clients, you know, but one way or another, you solve it and you create it because that's what you've determined to do, because that's what you're doing with your life and there's no other alternative.
Now, the people though, who want to start building these assets, who have only ever sold time for money, and don't have, you know, they don't have anything yet. And let's say they're moonlighting and writing a book and everything else and creating more assets on the side. What role do you think stocks, bonds, all that should play? I mean, I know you have a lot of experience in that. I'm the son of a kind of like a day trader. So I have, you know, my experience is my mom hammering in my head, your dad lost 100 grand with options in a week, and, you know, don't go near them. Don't go near a lot of that. And, so, you know,
I'm sure he really appreciates you sharing that on the podcast.
No, he tells it. I mean, he always compared options to crack cocaine. He's like, look, made a killing with them, but over, when you look at it long run, he lost a lot of money.
Yeah. It's gambling.
Yeah. Right. So, anyway, so, you know, that's my background in
done
there.
Wrong,
so,
by the way, done wrong. If you use them as speculative vehicles, there are ways to do them that have positive expectancy. He just wasn't doing that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, probably. It's just,
if you're trading them outright as bets on market direction or whatever over time. Yeah.
Right.
Negative expectancy.
But the thing I noticed from him was he was always glued to the, you know, the stock tickers and CNBC and everything else. And the problem with me, and the reason I never got into these other assets like stocks until somewhat recently through index funds, is I knew that if I were to actually go and start buying individual stocks, I would have a productivity hit, a huge one, because I'd be glued to the damn, you know, stock tickers and everything. I think a lot of this was just education on my part, but learning how to properly bucket things into these assets that don't involve management, don't involve a lot of management, at least, don't involve a lot of oversight, I guess is the best way of putting it. And I've, you know, over the last year, I've really built up, a good amount of money in these different things, along with the assets I control. And it's really made it nice, because now, you know, I was actually just talking with my wife earlier today about how, you know, we're doing a conference in New York this summer, and we were talking about what we wanted to do. We're bringing the kids and my wife, obviously, and we were going to stay there for a few weeks. And, you know, usually we'd be getting to Europe and freaking out about, well, how are we going to fund all this? You know, we can't fit it into our current cash flow. But it's really nice just, you know, knowing now that we've got these things in place that allow me to safely, pull money out without freaking out or anything like that. I don't know why I went down the tangent, but let's draw things back to the average freelancer who's listening. So, you know, I wrote an article the other week, or last week really, about financial independence for freelancers. And in it, I talk about how, you know, if you were to, let's say you can double your rate, which is something I focus on a lot, by looking at how people can make themselves more premium of an asset to their clients. Well, if you just kept and maintained your standard of living and rerouted all of that additional revenue toward, investments, let's say, that to me is a great way to start down the path of financial independence. Though conversely, let's say you double your income through becoming more premium, you can also cut your availability in half, have the same standard of living, and invest that time in building your own assets. So a lot of different things that can, you know, when you look at everything as just tweaking levers, yeah, it's very eye-opening, I guess.
Yeah, I fully agree. It's, you know, you have to focus on building equity. That's what wealth builders do. They build equity, and you can do it through any of the three asset classes. So you're kind of, you know, you're all around the edges of it. You just have to put it in a structured process. So the path towards wealth is, and you'll see that you're fitting this criteria, but everything you need to know about wealth building, you can say in one sentence. It's make more than you spend and invest the difference wisely. Right? So you're spending less than you earn. So it's those three dimensions that you're working with, right? So you've got spend less, make more, and then invest the difference wisely. And so pretty much everything we've said fits into those three dimensions of that one sentence.
That's a good way of putting it. Do you have any advice or whatnot for somebody who, I mean, again, there's a lot of things that could, you know, you could think about, well, how do I go and do market research to develop a product that then in turn becomes an asset of mine?
Well, you don't do market research. What you do is you listen to the people that follow you already.
Right. Well, that's what I meant by market research and, you know, putting your head to the floor and listening to what problems people have and responding to those problems.
Yeah. People pay. I mean, the essence of business is solving problems, and people will pay for one thing, which is a solution to their problems. And so you have to figure out how to create solutions to people's problems that they'll pay for.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
And you know, it's funny, you brought up earlier that I think you called it the bar, right? Where at the one end you have passive, on the other end you have active. One of the things I've talked about a lot is this idea that even on the, from the solutions perspective, if you have a client, like let's think of a client who owns a restaurant and wants more customers to walk into their restaurant so they get more sales. On the one end of the spectrum, you have hiring a web designer who can go and build you a custom website for your restaurant and hope maybe even set you up with some marketing stuff. And, you know, that's high price, but it's also super personalized and it's very one-off, right? On the far end of the spectrum, you have a book on how to get more customers from the internet for restaurants or something, right? That is more do-it-yourself. It's more informational and educational. It's not, you know, you don't read the book and have new customers. Instead, you read the book and then you implement it. And hopefully by implementing it, you then have more customers. And so that, you know, those are kind of polar opposites. But then in the middle, you've got like my friend Brian's former business Restaurant Engine, where turnkey service that you go, you pay the money. They've built hundreds of restaurant websites. You know, they go in and, you know, and they do this for you, right? Like they do what a high-priced web designer would do, but it's going to be templated and generalized. And I mean, it's not going to be as specific as that kind of that high-end route. So the way I look at things is, you know, if you're going to, if you've developed websites for a lot of restaurants and you're thinking, well, what kind of product can I make that's more passive? I mean, what are the questions people have asked you during the sales process? What concerns and objections have they had, and, you know, and so on. And I mean, honestly, all the products I've developed have been directly from that. I was doing, supporting a lot of consultants who were kind of in a way getting coaching services from me, having built this agency. And then from that, that's where all of my products have emerged from, because I realized I was saying and doing the same thing again and again and again. So it made it kind of easy for me, at least, to develop a lot of these products.
Yeah, ultimately, the formula for business is very simple. It's traffic times conversion equals profit. And so you looking at what's your conversion value, right? So a service has a higher conversion value than a book. Different types of businesses have different levels of traffic. So obviously, an internet website can have a lot more traffic than a service business, you know, or a storefront. So there's different dimensions or different ways you can play with it. But the formulas are very simple. I mean, none of this stuff is complex. It's, you just got to implement, you know? So it's about implementation and iteration on the implementation until you get it right. But again, the formulas are very simple. I mean, the formula for wealth was, you know, make more than you spend and invest the difference wisely. And for business profits, it's traffic times conversion equals profit.
That's a great way of putting it. You've got so many eloquent ways of summing up all the as you pointed out, the random, like, you know, circling the concepts in my head, but not having a clear way of putting it. So,
well, I live and breathe this stuff, Brennan.
Yeah, no, I know.
And, you know, I mean, I've been teaching this. I'm 55. You know, I've been living I've walked the talk for a couple decades, and then I was teaching multiple coaching clients for another decade and a half. Right. And you know, so I've been living this stuff for a while. So you get it down after a while.
But I mean, seriously, Todd, I know so many. The number one reason that I've seen freelancers fail, it's usually not even due to anything technical or, you know, not being able to properly sell and market themselves. I mean, that sometimes has an effect, but it's almost always something related to bad financial management. And, you know, I've been guilty of that for well over a decade, and it took me a long time to really get smart about it. And I'm so glad I have, because every issue I've ever had with marriage, my kids, my stress levels, I mean, almost all of it had to do with money. And I think that's pretty universal. And, you know, just fixing it and getting to the point where I can have, where I'm not beholden to, you know, oh, I better sell this much this month or something, or otherwise I'm in trouble. It's been a great, great place to get to, I guess. So, you know, I can't.
And just to make it relatable to your listeners, you've been at it a while. And so what, you know, the listeners just need to go through a structured process to get to the same point. Yes, it's a very desirable endpoint. And how do they get there? Well, they build equity one brick at a time, as you've been doing. You know, you've got equity in your website and the traffic that comes through it that converts to your products. You know, you're constantly building equity. The way you and I met was through another podcast that you were a featured guest on, you know, just as I was a featured guest on a different podcast. And so we kind of met virtually. You know, that's equity, right? Because that's how people find you and come over and find your business. You know, you've been at it a while, and so it takes some time. You just keep compounding it brick by brick by brick, and eventually you wake up one day and you go, wow, this is substantial.
Yeah,
this worked.
And so, but the key is you just have to start somewhere. And that's why I was giving a little tough love earlier in the interview where I was saying, you know, where you're saying, oh, they say they don't have the time. Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
It's a question of priority. If you've got, if it's a priority, you will make it happen. It has to become a priority for you. When it becomes a priority, you will make it happen.
And it's not even, I mean, the other thing too has been, you know, it's a lot of people start, but a lot of people don't continue. And I think that's the other big thing is, you know, I've shown up and even when no one was reading my stuff, and probably you too, I just kept writing and I kept putting stuff out there.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I see a lot of people who, and I get it. I mean, we live in a society that likes instant gratification, and you know, it would be great if it was as easy as the infomercials promise, but it's not like that.
No, I actually have a post on my site that talks about one of the key factors is the, you know, the long-term viewpoint, the ability to deal with delayed gratification. That's one of the hallmarks of people who build wealth.
Yeah. So let's close with this. So you know, you've got a lot at financialmentor.com. What would be the best, you know, if somebody wanted to really get started with going down this path and actually shaping up and getting smart about this, what would be, where should they go? Like, what do you recommend?
You're giving me a layup. I have a course called How to Design Your Life to Result in Financial Independence, where it touches on a couple of topics we have, but obviously goes way more in detail. And that's step three of the 7 steps to 7 figures. They can find underneath the products tab. Site. That's the paid thing, but I mean, that's a direct hit for what you're asking. In terms of free, just to see if I'm a clown or if I really know what I'm talking about or whatever, I've got some free stuff that builds relationship. And so if they go on the site and they subscribe, they get a free ebook, which is 18 Essential Lessons of a Self-Made Millionaire. And it, again, it goes through some of the stuff we touched on. It's just a lot of the lessons I learned along the way. And then I have another, it's a mini course I give away called 52 Weeks to Financial Freedom. And you won't get rich in 52 weeks, but what it'll do is give you an overview of the step-by-step process everybody goes through to build wealth and achieve financial independence at any age. And so those are both giveaways. They cost nothing. And so that's for new subscribers over at the site, and that's financialmentor.com.
Awesome. Well, Todd, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on the show, Brennan.
If you want to find out more about Todd and what he's up to, go over to financialmentor.com. And if you would like, if you haven't yet left a review for the podcast, go on over to iTunes, type in Brennan Dunn, type in Double Your Freelance, and you'll find it. Leave a review. I read and cherish every review that comes in. And it really does help with getting this podcast in front of more people. All right. We will see you back again for another exciting episode of the Double Your Freelancing podcast.